Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 32, recorded Friday, February 10th, 2006. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler, more about the journey than the destination. Three topics on today's podcast: traveling home, trolling for free Wi-Fi, and will registered traveler be worth it? This week, coming to you from the Marriott Courtyard in Irvine, California, close by John Wayne Santa Ana Orange County Airport. As I mentioned last week, I had a couple of flights this week, a Monday, Tuesday up and back to Memphis, and then a Thursday, Friday out and back here to Orange County. I decided to twist my usual practices ever so slightly this week. I took window seats on all my flights rather than my usual aisle perch. And a nice view of the Oxbow Lakes off the Mississippi River on the flight down to Memphis, and saw some of the Orange County fires on the flight out yesterday. If there's no weather today, I should get to see some of the high desert plateaus around Santa Fe, New Mexico, maybe even a peak of the Grand Canyon. It does mean I need to manage my fluid intake on these four-hour flights between Chicago and L.A., though. The airplane etiquette says that the window seat passenger can only ask the aisle seat guy to get up once. Anything else is inconsiderate. Following up, you may remember that my first flight in January, I ticked over 2 million miles on American Airlines Advantage program. I've been an Advantage member since 1985. Felt like a pretty big milestone to me, something deserving at least an email from American. I've heard nothing from them until Wednesday, when in my January account summary email, there was this blurb: "Congratulations, you have accomplished what few American Airlines Advantage members achieve, over 2 million miles in the Advantage program. You will receive a new card reflecting your outstanding achievement soon." That was it. It was halfway down the page, buried after the offers to earn thousands of miles by financing my home or buying a Lincoln Zephyr. I would have missed it completely if the sentence wasn't all in caps. I wasn't overly impressed. Peter Rukavina sent me a note following up on Travel Commons number 30, where we talked about taking the train to the plane. First off, Peter rubs it in a little. Here in Charlottetown, Prince Edward's Island in Canada, the airport is 10 minutes north of the downtown where I live. While there's no public transit to the airport, a $10 cab gets there quickly, and the airport is never very busy, so I regularly leave home for a 6:10 a.m. flight by catching a cab from my home at 5:30 a.m. Nice. You know, many of us are trying to get to the airport an hour before flight time, and Peter's cruising in at boarding. Obviously, no TSA worries for him in Charlottetown. He goes on, "My favorite U.S. city for getting into town from the airport is Boston, where a free shuttle to the T subway system leaves regularly from all terminals at Logan Airport, and downtown is just 3 to 4 subway stops and less than 10 minutes away. When my Logan flights are delayed for a couple hours, I often pop into the city to kill a bit of time." You know, I've never spent enough time in Boston really to figure out the T, but I have taken a water taxi from Logan to Charlestown. It was a bit of a hassle to get there. It was at the end of the shuttle bus line, but once there, it was a great ride. You know, I'll tell you, this wasn't any sort of tarted up ferry boat. This was a low to the water, spray in the air working boat. Great view of the city and quick, too. Now, while I talked about the Paddington Express from Heathrow to downtown London, Peter mentions another service to connect through London. Although it's not the most convenient thing in the world, I'm a regular user of National Express buses from London's Heathrow Airport to either Stansted, Gatwick, or Luton airports, all in other areas around the city, to allow me to marry cheap international flights to London with cheap intra-Europe flights on Ryanair and EasyJet. Buses leave from the central bus station at Heathrow and generally take an hour to an hour and a half, depending on the destination and the traffic. For going to destinations in Europe, a London flight plus bus plus discount fare can often save hundreds or thousands of dollars compared to the price of a direct flight to the destination. You know, that's an interesting approach to shooting the gaps in the flight scheduling system, you know, picking off the cheap legs and constructing your own connections. You know, I wonder if you can get the bus to leave you off at a Fuller's Pub for a quick pint before carrying on to Luton. Finally, Peter says, I just got back from Geneva, Switzerland. There's regular train service from a station that's only 300 meters from the arrival area that runs into the main station downtown. Tickets are only 3 Swiss francs or about $2.30 US. You gotta love it. Now, if you remember the first Travel Commons vacation podcast this summer, that was Travel Commons number 8, my family, we started off our 2-week European holiday in Geneva. Now, when at the airport, I saw the signs for the train, but I'll tell you, with a wife, 2 kids, and a good bit of luggage in tow, the taxi ride seemed like a good investment. As always, feedback and follow-ups are always appreciated. The email address, comments, COMMENTS, at travelcommons.com, or you can post them on the website at travelcommons.com. Like I can fly, fly, fly. Nothing seems to matter now that you're here beside me. Fly, fly, fly. When I'm here with you, I feel alive. And all the cars wouldn't buy. Today's first topic on the Travel Commons podcast, traveling home. You know, my travel takes me to a lot of places. I mean, just listen to this medley of bathrooms at the beginning of Travel Commons number 27, the 2005 wrap-up episode.
Coming to you from the bathroom of the Camelback Inn in Scottsdale, Arizona.
From the bathroom of the Wardman Park Marriott.
Bathroom of the Budapest Marriott.
From the bathroom of the LAX Westin.
Courtyard in East Memphis.
In the bathroom of the Stamford, Connecticut Marriott.
From the bathroom of the Orchard Hotel in San Francisco.
The Marriott in Memphis, Tennessee.
From the bathroom of the Residence Inn on Tudor Wharf in Charlestown.
Toilette of the Novotel in downtown Geneva. Switzerland.
From the bathroom of the Marriott Courtyard in Oldsmar, Florida.
From the bathroom of the Civic Center Marriott in downtown Durham, North Carolina.
Coming to you from the DoubleTree Club in Santa Ana, California.
From the bathroom of the Philadelphia Marriott.
Some of the places are just that, places. Tampa, Boston, Raleigh, Durham, all nice places, but really no special meaning. Other places, Memphis, Orange County this week, Philadelphia back in December, have a bit more meaning. I went to middle school and high school in Memphis. My folks lived in Orange County, Huntington Beach to be exact, for 12 years, and I lived in Philadelphia for 4. Travel to these places feels a bit different. My travel pattern veers off the usual airport, office, hotel path, and I'm usually not in the same hurry to leave to get home. Because these are places you remember. Touchstones that, you know, you need to at least drive by. Past houses are a common draw. How has the neighborhood changed? We lived in 2 houses in Memphis. The first, in the northeast section of town, when I drove by it this week, looked a bit run down. You could feel that the neighborhood had moved downscale in the 25 years since we'd lived there. The cars with the two-tone Bondo paint job parked out front, the faded paint on many of the houses. What had been a solidly middle-class neighborhood felt like, it had slipped a peg or two. Now, driving through Germantown, which was the eastern suburb of Memphis we moved to right before I left home for college, I just immediately got lost. You know, some of the through streets had been closed off and a new park had been built, throwing off my navigation by glimmer of familiarity approach. I finally found the street we lived on, but I couldn't find the house. As near as I could tell, our entire neighborhood had been torn down and new houses were being built in their place. Now, this stunned me. The original houses weren't shacks. Ours was a big southern colonial, and we had nicknamed it Tara after the Gone with the Wind plantation. Nor were they old. I mean, my folks had bought Tara new in 1979. I drove down the street and through the neighborhood 3 or 4 times, but I couldn't spot that southern colonial. And Tara wasn't a house you could miss. Instead, there were just bulldozers and brand new houses with big roofs. Indeed, it's a bit frustrating for me driving around Memphis because I used to know it so well. I knew all the ways around the town, all the back ways through the neighborhoods. Now, 25 years later, the street names are all familiar, but I can't quite remember how they relate to one another, which ones intersect and which ones run parallel. You know, I don't know. I just give up and run MapQuest just like I do every other town I visit. Now, here in Orange County, though, it's a bit different. My folks retired to Denver in the late 90s, but I've kept coming here for business, so I really haven't lost touch. Yesterday, I had a bit of time on my hands, so I drove down to Huntington Beach and camped out at the Starbucks on Main Street for a coffee and some Wi-Fi. How do you get that serving, right? I'll have a grande skim non-fat grande cappuccino and a side of Wi-Fi. You know, I caffeinated while burping out the dozen or so emails that I had written on the flight out, took a couple of phone calls, called a friend back in Chicago, and did the, hey, I'm on the beach and it's 75 degrees, what's it like back there? I did that thing knowing full well it was 30 degrees and miserable. I walked down Main Street, noticed a new restaurant, thought about stopping off at Wahoo's Fish Tacos for a quick bite, but decided instead to walk to the end of the pier. I got misted from a pretty heavy afternoon fog, white tendrils all over my black blazer. Same restaurant at the end of the pier, same surfers bobbing in the waves. Looking up at the clock tower on the corner of Main and Pacific Coast Highway, I'm a couple minutes late. I needed to head back to the airport to pick up a colleague and then get back on that airport office hotel track again. The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast, trolling for free Wi-Fi. You know, in last week's episode, we talked about the woes of Wi-Fi, especially the charges at some hotels. And you know, over the past 3 years, high-speed internet connections have quickly moved from being a luxury to a near necessity. You know, I can't remember the last time I plugged a phone line into the modem port of my laptop. You know, and there's an expectation now, at least in the corporate world, that you'll be syncing up over high-speed lines. Nobody gives a second thought about sending out an email message with a 2 to 3 meg attachment and the subject line, you know, thought you'd be interested in this. Send something like that out 4 years ago and you'd be strung up by the recipients who had to wait an hour while this pig came down over a 22 kilobit dial-up connection that they managed to nail up at their hotel room, waiting all that time before they could finally send out their time-critical emails. You know, of course, that's all changed with Wi-Fi built into every laptop and wireless access easily available in every metropolitan area. The question, though, is one of cost. And the Holy Grail is, of course, a free hotspot. But finding one sometimes feels like the search for that long-lost relic. There are a few websites like wififreespot.com that provide some decent lists of free Wi-Fi spots. And there's some blogs like metrofreefi.com with some good hotspot reviews and commentaries. But, you know, as you would expect with something as sort of freeform and anarchic as free Wi-Fi, finding these spots tends to be more of a pleasant surprise than a planned expectation. You know, finding the free Wi-Fi at Tampa Airport was just one of those pleasant surprises. I was killing some time outside the Starbucks in the main terminal waiting for some colleagues to arrive, and just on a whim, I lit up NetStumbler to see what was broadcasting. And I saw this network, TPA, and so checking it out, I ended up connecting to the free service. And I later found it was in the satellite terminals also. That was a huge find for me. It made my flight delays much less painful. Pleasant surprises are nice, but sort of tough to plan your business day around. So you begin to collect these locations, maybe in a notebook or your day timer or your PDA or maybe a little text document on your laptop, desktop. You jot down your own happy discoveries and places passed along by friends and acquaintances. Independent coffee shops like the Housing Works Used Book Cafe in Soho, which was passed along to me by Greg Gallant of the Venture Voice podcast. Even more useful, though, are the hotel chains that are lighting up their lobbies. You know, checking into the courtyard here in Irvine yesterday afternoon, there were 10 people on laptops banging away. You know, not sure how many of them were guests, and quite honestly, not sure how good their actual speeds were. You know, 10 guys hanging off of a single DSL line. But if you needed a place near John Wayne Airport to sync Outlook or maybe refresh your podcast cache before hopping a flight, you know, this isn't a bad place. And as I mentioned in last week's podcast, these mid-tier hotels, Courtyard, DoubleTree, Best Western, Holiday Inn Express, they're all wiring their hotel rooms and lighting up their lobbies with free broadband. I mean, I don't know which one started it, but the competition is spreading it pretty fast. And it's great for the business traveler, whether you're flying in or driving in. It's a good bit easier to spread out the briefcase contents in a hotel lobby than it is a coffee shop. And a lot less dangerous. I've seen what a grande frappuccino can do to a keyboard. And the last topic on today's Travel Commons podcast, will registered traveler be worth it? A few weeks back, Travel Commons listener Leo Vigoda sent me a link to a Wired article on the latest efforts around the TSA's Registered Traveler Program. That's the one where frequent flyers willing to be fingerprinted and background checked will get their own airline screening lanes run by private companies. Now, Senate Commerce Committee hearings on the program this week put it back in the regular newspapers today. And though some senators were taking the TSA to task for delays in implementing the program, I think the bigger question is, will it be worth it? I mean, the premise of the program is that an applicant will undergo a government background check and submit 10 fingerprints, which will be encoded onto a smart card. And then when the cardholder enters the security lane, they'll have their fingerprints compared to those stored on the card. This is actually pretty similar to a kind of a fast pass approach that the immigration service has used for many years. As a matter of fact, I used it with great success when I was doing a lot of travel between Chicago and Toronto. Rather than standing in the big long INS queue, I just went up, popped my card in a reader, put my hand on a scanner, and boop, I walked through. And so in my mind, kind of this is maybe a little bit similar to what the Registered Traveler Program is envisioned. But, you know, while the cardholders here for Registered Traveler will have these dedicated screening lanes, they'll still have to pass through metal detectors and have their bags x-rayed. You know, what's different than today? I mean, at most airports, frequent travelers already have access to dedicated screening lanes by virtue of the precious metal frequent flyer status, you know, Platinum Advantage, Gold World Traveler, or they've scored a first-class upgrade. I mean, I can't remember the last time I stood in a premium line for more than 10 minutes, and really, you know, anything more than sort of 5 or 7 minutes is a real rarity. And the TSA isn't even clear whether registered travelers would even get to keep their shoes on going through metal detectors. Now, you know, there's a bargain. I pay $80 for the privilege of letting the government root around in my private life, collect and store biometric data on me, and then I still have TSA goons shouting at me about my shoes. You know, I don't know. Maybe I'm missing something, but I think registered traveler is DOA. Maybe, you know, I don't know. Maybe the TSA is trying to kill it so that private companies can't get reestablished in airports. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's a job protection thing, but I just can't see this thing going anywhere. Though maybe what they're hoping is because it's run by a private company, you actually won't have to deal with the TSA, and that your recent experiences with the TSA have been bad enough that you'll pay $80 just to get away from them. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 32. I hope you've all enjoyed this podcast, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed. All the music on today's show is from the Podshow Podsafe Music Network, Fly, Fly, Fly by Adrena Thorpe, Homemade Hurricane by Amplifico, and Beggarstown by Hollow Horse. The website is music.podshow.com. If you have a story, a thought, comment, gripe, the voice of the traveler, send them along, text or MP3 file to comments@travelcommons.com or post them on our website at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everybody who's taken the time to provide feedback. Well, I'm off to Houston on Monday and New Hampshire on Wednesday, so until next week, safe travels. I was born